Good morning or afternoon, everyone. Welcome to emforum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host and moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. We will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. We do want you to take part in this discussion. If you need assistance, you may use the hand-raising button on your participants panel, and then our associate, Lori Weber, we'll try to help you via private chat. Now, when disaster strikes, a community may be left high and dry if it loses its water and wastewater facilities. So restoring these utilities are a high priority in most communities. Today, we are going to learn about the Water Wastewater Agency Response Network, or WARN, a mutual aid initiative designed to facilitate rapid response and recovery for these essential services. First, for the benefit of any newcomers today, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to any questions and comments you may have. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part of the program. Today's recordings and a copy of the slides will be available from our site later this afternoon, and a transcript will be available early next week. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's speakers. Dr. Kevin Morley is the Security and Preparedness Program Manager for the American Water Works Association, where he has been responsible for facilitating the expansion of mutual aid and assistance networks within the water sector based on the Utilities Helping Utilities Action Plan developed by the association in 2005. John Whitler is an environmental protection specialist with the United States Environmental Protection Agency, Water Security Division, where he has worked on water sector preparedness and emergency response since 2004. Please do see today's background page for further biographical details and related links to resources that will be mentioned during the presentation today, and also the action plan that I just mentioned. Welcome to both of you, and I now pass the floor over to Kevin to start us off, please.
Well, thank you very much, Amy, and I appreciate the opportunity to participate in the EM forum. I think this is quite timely on the heels of the Hurricane Sandy that the East Coast experienced here a few weeks ago. So to begin, as Amy mentioned, the focus of this discussion is on the WARN program, otherwise that's the shorthand term for the Wastewater Agency Response Network. And really, I think just to begin with a bit of background here, the WARN program really got its inception from the experience of utilities in California. And in the early 90s, on the backside of the many events that they have in California, principally earthquakes and wildfires and landslides and that nature, and the utilities in that area realized that they needed a way to collaborate and work together to respond and recover their communities more quickly and more efficiently. So that process moved along in California. And then in 2004, Florida experienced some significant hurricane activity, and as they considered a similar type of need amongst utilities, they learned of the program in California and developed something similar in Florida based on that model, which then lent itself to the national framework that Amy mentioned, the Utilities Helping Utilities framework, which myself and Ray Reardon, who kind of spearheaded some of the activities in California and is now the current CalWARN chair, really helped facilitate the development, and certainly my colleague John at EPA was very much involved in this. And so I want to set the tone as to what WARN actually is, and it really is embodied most principally in this agreement. This document that can be found on nationalwarn.org provides a bit of background on the history, the principles that are embodied in the agreement, and for those of you familiar with the EMAC program, the State-to-State Emergency Management Assistance Compact, this agreement is very much modeled on that, but it's at a local level amongst asset owners and operators that would need unique assistance and resources amongst each other. And so we've heard it many, many times, planning is great and good, but until you really need it, you don't know it. But what we attempt to do with this, with the agreement that's here, is recognize that assistance is voluntary. It's not mandatory. Obviously, if you're a compromised situation, you don't want to be committing assets and resources. So it is a voluntary. There is no obligation to participate, either to be a signatory to the agreement or no obligation to deploy should that put your own system in place. There is no cost to be a member of a WARN program. And more importantly, the things that we don't want to have to deal with during an emergency, like liability, workman's comp issues, reimbursement processes, all that legalese lawyer stuff is dealt with in the agreement so that everybody understands the rules of the sandbox. Having two young boys, that's an important thing, but it's really important when you're in the midst of chaos to really understand the processes and procedures and not have to be negotiating those things. The WARN agreement also addresses most, if not all, elements of NIMS, the National Incident Management System. And in fact, a utility, by a utility being a participant and signatory to the WARN program, they help the community that they're part of be compliant with the NIMS criteria that has come down from FEMA to the states, which then reaches down to the local community. And I think in the beginning, it was seen as something for utilities in earthquake or hurricane regions, and certainly that's where a lot of the growing pains were with this process. But as I will show you shortly, it is a very much an all-hazards capability. It's not specific to any particular region or type of event. So with the development of this document and the agreement and the demonstration that we had with Florida being very effective in their response to Hurricane Katrina and facilitating recovery of systems in Mississippi and Alabama, we learned that this could be a very effective approach. And at a national level, we took the lead in facilitating a series of workshops in collaboration with EPA across the country to introduce this concept and the model to the water sector. And so what I'm going to show you now is a series of slides that are just illustrative of this bottom-up approach and how it evolved. So in April of 2006, when we really started to kick off the workshops, at the time, you'll recall that shortly after Hurricane Katrina, there was something called Hurricane Rita that really beat up on parts of the Texas coast. And so they quickly adopted the model that was already in place in Florida. And so in early 2006, we had three states that you'll see as green. And so green means that they have multiple utilities as signatories to the WARN agreement in that given state. And obviously on the backside of Hurricane Katrina, the Gulf Coast states were seriously considering this initiative. And so as time went on and we were able to do a series of workshops, you can see that this is, again, a very bottoms-up approach. The signatories to this agreement are the utility owners and operators. So whatever the name of the utility is in your town, they would be the signatory to the agreement. And there are a number of cooperating entities, principally state emergency management and the state primacy agencies that have regulatory oversight of the water sector as partners, along with the associations. But it's really important that we have this relationship both amongst the utilities to evolve our situation awareness, but also to provide a more effective means of communication with the emergency management community to understand what is going on in the water sector because of the the critical lifeline service that it does provide. Granted, we are not a traditional emergency response sector, but, you know, it is very difficult to put out a fire or manage a hospital if there's no water. So as you can see here, in May of 2007, after we had done a series of workshops, in less than a year's time, there is an active acknowledgement of the value of this, of the WARN model amongst utilities in the given states. So you have now, by May 2007, six states with a WARN program and multiple in progress. By January of 2008, it had jumped up to 20. And as of right now, we have 48 WARN programs in the U.S., which includes the national capital region. So technically, there could ultimately be 51 in the states. And we now have, very proud to say, two Canadian provinces that have adopted the WARN model and several in consideration. So you can see that the water sector has taken this capability and it's demonstrated value from a bottoms-up approach, again, not top-down, bottom-up, to becoming more, I should say, self-sufficient in the time of emergency. The types of assets and resources that are available from utilities to assist other utilities are relatively unique, and those skill sets are not found within FEMA or EPA, who is our federal partner, to some extent within the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which I'll speak to with regard to response to Sandy. But we're close to each other, and so we're able to move very quickly. It is also very important to understand what it is you need. And so one of the things as this program and initiative evolved over time, we realized it was really important to be able to talk to each other with the principles of NIMS in mind, understanding to be very specific about what it is you need. So in that regard, we took the initiative to develop a resource diving manual that covers 24 standardized resource teams based on FEMA guidance for typing and resources. And that is also available on the nationalwarn.org website. But this is really important because it sets the stage, allows the utilities to think ahead in terms of the types of resources they could deploy should they become necessary. And in that case, the ever necessary costing issues that the bean counters at the state emergency management or the insurance companies or whoever is involved in reimbursement are going to want that documentation. So this sets up the process to begin capturing some of that information that becomes very important. As I said, the nationalwarn.org website has a number of different resources. There's a page that has the WARN contacts in all the states and Canadian provinces, along with the page I'm displaying here, which is actually the WARN resources page, which has a number of some of the background materials, examples of the outreach materials that our WARNs have used in different states to speak to either local officials or other utilities about the value of being a participant in this. And then I think John will go into this more, but one of the things that he was instrumental in developing is some tabletop exercise resources and operational plans. So I think of it as the WARN agreement is kind of like having the car, and the ops plan is really like the driver's ed class. How do you move the thing? So I'll leave that to John to speak to in greater detail. How does it work? Well, the point here is that the WARN program helps bridge the gap. It does not require a federal declaration, and it does provide for private utility resources. While the majority of water systems are municipally based or independent authorities, there are systems that are private entities, but the services that they provide to that community are just as critical as those provided by municipal government, so it's very important for them to be able to work together. And so what this allows the utility to determine at the time of when the need occurs, that they know that they're going to have a problem that's going to exceed their capacity. they can call on this system. It's not the only system, but it is a way for them to expedite assets and resources that can help them recover, because oftentimes it takes many weeks for a federal declaration to occur, and so we don't want to have to wait for that to happen to get assistance to this critical lifeline sector. As events evolve and become much more regional in scale, such as a Hurricane Irene or Katrina, or as we just experienced with Hurricane Sandy, there becomes a need to potentially move assets across state lines. And so given that most utilities are municipal resources, there are in some cases state law barriers from moving assets across state lines without appropriate protocols. And so the EMAC model helps facilitate that. And so by having the WARN program be embedded as close as possible with the state emergency operations center, as resources are exceed the capability of the utilities in that given state, they can reach up into the state EOC, put a request out via the EMAC program, and ideally that reaches down into the surrounding states, which then connect into those WARN programs and see if the resources can be obtained. And certainly we had a very excellent experience with our partners at EMAC during Hurricane Sandy that I'll explain a little bit further. And so for those in the emergency management community that are on the webinar today, I would strongly encourage you, if you don't know, John and I can provide the contacts with your WARN program, get them into the state EOC. They are a valuable asset in having operational and situational awareness of the needs and the criticality and the prioritization of those recoveries that can really, really help expedite the recovery of the communities that may have been impacted. So has this ever worked? Heck yes. It's worked many times in many places and a lot of different things. You can see California has had several instances where they've dealt with earthquakes or fires. I think one of the more unique situations was in the Colorado. With the Colorado WARN program, they were very effective in addressing a salmonella outbreak and recovering that community very quickly within a matter of weeks. And then, obviously, Florida has dealt with numerous hurricanes and tornadoes. And then, most recently, the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts WARN programs were very busy here in the end of October with the response to hurricane or superstorm Sandy. So with respect to Hurricane Sandy, it was the first time for New York to have a very active mobilization, especially in the downstate region of Long Island and New York City area, and the types of resources exchanged amongst utilities included chlorination equipment, chainsaw crews, motor dryers for a flooded wastewater facility, and generators. And you can see generators has been a very common thing, and the situation there was, you know, upwards of eight million plus people were without power and widespread devastation of the electric grid. And simply put, while many utilities do have generators, generators are not meant to operate for a week or 2 weeks without any kind of sustained recovery. And so in some cases, those things needed to be replaced. And in the case in New Jersey, we had a situation where a utility did have emergency generators. It was on natural gas, but the community was going to have to close the natural gas line for safety purposes, and so they needed to bring in a diesel generator. And as those requests stacked up, it became clear that the volume of need was going to exceed the state's capacity, and our friends within the EMAC program were very effective once we had notification of those resources. And in fact, cleared, I think it was upwards of 9 to 10 resource needs in a matter of less than 24 hours to get those assets deployed to the benefit of the water sector. So we're very appreciative of that and are encouraged that that is a system that can be expanded and applied in other states. Hopefully it won't be necessary, but if and when it does become necessary, we know that it can work well. So I would kind of close here and cede the rest of the time to my friend John. And how valuable is participation? So the benefits, really from a utility perspective, is reduced loss of revenue. The faster I can get my utility recovered, the faster, you know, obviously for the utility itself is recovery of the revenue stream for that utility, but it's also important for the economy of that community that if the water system and the wastewater system are not working well, we got some real problems. The average cost of participation, very low. The utility needs to agree to be a participant, and if and when the need occurs, they deploy. And so the value of this and public confidence in the utility providing the services is quite priceless, and I hope the massacre people don't call us up after this, but I think it's an effective way to communicate the use and value of WARN. And so the bottom line is I don't think any utility can afford not to participate, and for our friends in the emergency management community to be a partner with the WARNs in assuring that this vital lifeline sector is sustained and recovers as quickly as possible. I think there's going to be time at the end for questions, but this is my contact information, which I'm sure Amy will have posted elsewhere. And with that, I'll see the rest of my time to John, Amy.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. And I'm just going to push the slides forward here. I'm really excited to present with you today and have this captive audience to learn about WARN. And I'm going to focus on how EPA has supported the WARN effort and then touch upon a few other related sort of water sector preparedness, response, and recovery resources that we have. So this is just a quick glimpse of the topics that I'm going to cover today, some of our WARN activities, some information about some fact sheets we have on coordinating between water utilities and emergency management agencies, and I'll finish with a discussion of our newly released Fed Funds tool. I like to start off the presentation just by showing this diagram that we put together that I think shows all the pieces of sort of how WARN fits together. And so using the foundation of the Mutual Aid and Assistance Agreement, this shows how the operational plan can help the WARN members activate that agreement and use it either in a real incident or just during an exercise. And then, of course, we encourage our WARNs to develop after-action reports from those incidents or exercises and implement changes to their program based on any concepts that they come up with as part of the improvement planning process. And finally, showing how some of the documents, such as the resource typing manual that Kevin mentioned, really support this process. So I think this sort of shows how a lot of the pieces of the WARN program fit together, and I just wanted to provide that as context here at the beginning of my talk. So we've been supporting tabletop exercises at EPA since 2008. These are discussion-based exercises really intended to bring together people within the WARN that don't normally have a chance to get together and talk. Some of our WARN programs are a little bit more robust than others and are able to do these meetings and exercises on their own, but others need the support of EPA to make this happen. And so we've been doing these exercises for quite a few years now. One of the things we like to do is make sure we bring as many key participants together as possible. And one of the audiences that we've really been targeting lately has been emergency management agencies, both at the local and state level, and figuring out how WARN can integrate with those groups. And also, I'd just like to highlight the participation of non-WARN members in the exercises. They get a great opportunity to learn about the WARN and to see it in action, and oftentimes we end up with new WARN members after the exercises. These exercises are objective-based, and I just wanted to provide a couple examples of what some of these objectives are. Some WARN programs don't have operational plans that support their agreement developed yet, so we spend some time at the exercises, maybe as part of a morning seminar, to help work through the development of operational plans in some cases. I mentioned this effort to integrate WARN into emergency management agencies, and we often spend time at the exercises working through that and attracting these non-members as well. So I'm just going to move forward quickly from there. This map just shows where we've been able to support exercises between 2008 and 2012. In green are states that have received support from EPA for an exercise. Those in the lighter blue color have done exercises on their own. So EPA has supported a total of 36 exercises over the last 5 years. And in 2013, we plan to host another 8 exercises. So trying to make sure we reach every state that needs support or wants support in hosting an exercise and really help them become more robust and more operationally efficient as a program through these exercises. So I mentioned the WARN operational plan, and I'm just going to give a quick overview of what this is and how WARN programs use it. It's basically the operational extension of the agreement, and it outlines the procedures that are helpful to have in place before the agreement's activated. And I'll go into a little bit more detail in the next couple of slides. So we've developed an operational plan template that's posted on the nationalwarn.org website that provides a nice resource for WARN programs to just sort of plug and play their information into that template. And I just want to acknowledge that we didn't make this concept up. It's not original to us. There's actually a FEMA NIMS independent study course about operational plans that we based some of the materials off of for our template. So this just highlights the major categories or sections within the operational plan, this concept of operations, how WARN's activated, how WARN members sort of mobilize resources, how the coordination works, how they document their efforts. We also provide some checklists and supporting documents. One of the things I think is very valuable within the WARN operational plan template are some checklists on things to consider prior to deploying resources in support of a mutual aid request, understanding what the conditions are going to be where your resources are going to be deployed, and also some tips for utilities that are requesting resources on things that they should be able to sort of have and provide for the resources they're requesting to make sure that they get used in the sort of most efficient and effective way. So it's a wealth of information in this template, and quite a few WARN programs have adopted these operational plans. So very quickly, I just wanted to highlight one of our latest outreach efforts, which has been the development of some WARN videos. We recently released the first two videos in the series. One is a short background on what the WARN program is, and the second video highlights what the tabletop exercise effort has been about. And we have two additional videos under development. The first one will highlight recent WARN responses and how WARN helped utilities repair and recover their systems after an incident. And the final one will talk about successful examples of WARN coordination with emergency management agencies. So I think the EPA website for the WARN program will be shown here at the end and is on the EM Forum webpage, but you can access those videos from there. I'm going to shift gears just a little bit here. This is something that Kevin and I both touched upon, but this is an effort a little bit separate from our WARN work, but very much connected. And this is a fact sheet we put out. It's 8 pages, and basically we wanted to make sure that utilities and emergency management agencies understood how they can work together, why they should work together, and why that relationship is valuable. And so you can see here, this is just an outline of some of the sections that are within the document. We tried to highlight sort of why this relationship is mutually beneficial, For example, emergency management agencies can't operate themselves unless they have water, their facilities. So that's a really basic one, but definitely a lack of water service will complicate any response, and we really try to make sure that that's emphasized throughout this document as well. And then, we give some tips on how you can actually build that relationship with your emergency management agency at the local level. And so in order to help facilitate that process, what we've done is provided a checklist of actions that can really help build that relationship. And this is just a summary of what is within that checklist, important things to consider, such as exchanging emergency contact information, understanding how water is integrated into the local emergency operations center. We see this time and time again that a lot of local agencies haven't even considered water infrastructure as part of their response efforts, and so we try to encourage that coordination at the emergency operations center level. Something that Kevin didn't touch upon but has been very active in is this concept of alternative water supplies and understanding the capabilities that exist at the utility level as well as at local and state emergency management agency level on if the water service is disrupted, are there plans for alternative water supplies? And that's a very important conversation to have in advance of an incident. And I'll just highlight one additional bullet here, which is providing a tour of facilities, which I think can be valuable in many ways and maybe sort of a fun activity to help attract the emergency management agency to your utility and make them aware of what's located at your facilities and if they ever have to respond there, what to expect. And one of the other sections of the document that I just wanted to give some attention to here today is we provide some case studies on the benefits that have been realized by utilities and emergency management agencies when they've made this relationship work. And so we go through and we talk about how a utility received some funding for security improvements. A utility also received funding to do some training from their emergency management agency. We talk about how emergency management agencies have helped locate resources for utilities that they otherwise couldn't get. And at times there's resources that through the WARN program may not be available, and an emergency management agency could help with that. So a lot of good case studies out there and hopefully things that other utilities can build upon in their own community. So now I'm going to move on to the last topic that I agreed to present on today, and that's some information related to funding after a disaster happens that can help a utility recover from an incident and potentially rebuild themselves in a more resilient and sustainable way. The first piece of information that we developed at EPA about this was a fact sheet that we wanted to make sure utilities were aware of the FEMA Public Assistance Program, which can be a very valuable funding mechanism for utilities to use after an incident, but also a challenging program to use if you haven't planned in advance to use the program. It's almost like learning a new language if you're in an incident trying to learn what you need to do to access that funding. So we tried to give utilities some ideas on what work could be covered, how do they actually access this reimbursement, and other FAQs are within this document. Things like documenting pre and post condition of your infrastructure with pictures is often helpful, and making sure you document the hours worked by your staff to make sure that all that is accounted for. We still had demand from our customers and from utilities for additional information related to disaster recovery. And so we've recently, and I'm very happy to say recently, released our Fed Funds tool, Federal Funding for Utilities in Natural Disasters. And this is a more comprehensive website, web-based tool. And there's five basic sections to the tool. There's a section that asks utility questions to determine which funding source is potentially the right source for them to go to. There's a section that provides resources to help prepare for accessing these funds, and I'll show a screenshot of one of those in a moment. A basic overview of the six programs that I'll mention on the next slide that we've chosen to highlight in Fed Funds. And then one of the more useful sections in my mind is utility examples, so actual utilities that have gone through the process and copies of their applications for funding, training materials, and other assistance, and I'll give another detail about that on a later slide. And then there's a currently in a disaster. If you haven't been able to look at the tool previously, we really summarize some of the key things that you would need in an actual incident or directly after an incident, some of the forms, cost information, things like that that would be helpful to have at your fingertips. So very powerful tool, very resource rich, and I'm going to highlight just a couple additional pieces here before we wrap up. So I just wanted to show a screenshot of the funding program overview screens. You can see that we highlight the FEMA Public Assistance Program, the FEMA Mitigation Program, the USDA Emergency Water Grants Program, the EPA State Revolving Funds, HUD Community Grants, and SBA loans. So those are the six programs that are included. And then there's multiple sort of categories of information that are provided about each one of these programs, and I don't have time to go into detail to show you all that today, but I encourage you to check it out on your own. There's also a great deal of information embedded within the tool, so there's multiple PDF documents that provide quick summary level type information on important topics. So in addition to that fact sheet on highlighting what the public assistance program is, within this Fed Funds tool, we also talk about what some of the lessons learned from utilities that have actually used the program are. And so I just thought that this was a great example of one of the products that's contained within Fed Funds that folks might want to be able to check out at some point. And then just some additional information on the utility examples, training, and assistance. And I think what I'll just highlight here are the funding mentors. So we've actually provided contact information for utilities and other people at the federal level that have agreed to and are available to assist any utility in need of working through some of these federal funding programs. And so talk about a great resource of being able to just call up one of your colleagues to understand how they went through the process of obtaining these funds. So I think that's a really special component of the Fed Funds tool, and I encourage everybody to check it out. While I had the floor, I didn't want to be remiss in just mentioning a couple of our other related preparedness products. We have a plethora of tools. You can see here I've highlighted a couple on tool that we have on how to do a tabletop exercise. We offer ICS and NIMS training that's been customized for water utilities. We have a laboratory support program within my division. We provide a database of contaminant information that we support. And then we also have an economic analysis tool for what happens with a water disruption. So I think Kevin and I have both used this slide multiple times, and it sort of states the obvious, but you know, emergencies are local, and you need a local response capability, and really WARN helps provide that. At a low or no cost. We're really interested in making sure utilities can maintain their operations. Those disruptions in service both, you know, impact the utility as well as the community, and you know, anybody that's been through a disaster and has lost their water service can attest to the fact of how great it is to get that water restored as quickly as possible. And we think that WARN and some of these other mechanisms that we talked about today can really facilitate that process for us. So I appreciate your attention and everybody joining today. And here's my contact information and the website where some of the resources that I've talked about here today can be found. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, both of you. Excellent program, excellent resources, and an excellent example of neighbors helping neighbors. We will proceed to our Q&A, and again, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, please find the Q&A panel and type your question in the box at the bottom. Please do select host to direct a question to, and then I will read any questions or comments aloud, and our guests will respond. And if you can address your question to either Kevin or John by name, that would be helpful as well. And if you've had any particular experience that relates to this that you want to share with us, we'd be happy to hear about that as well. So we are ready to begin, and you may answer, enter your question or comment at any time. Okay, we do have one from Richard Van Dam who asks, are there plans to offer any of the resources as NIMS type resources? And we did talk a little bit about the typing document. I can't quite recall. Was that you, Kevin?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good question. We have been in some discussions with FEMA on that, and that is a, I don't have a resolution to that question. However, what I can offer is that the water utilities themselves are using this resource to frame their responses. I mean, sometimes things become quite simple, but the anticipation or the purpose of this document is to anticipate things that are on a potentially larger scale need, and so it addresses both the resources, the actual physical, you know, assets like backhoes, track hoes, jetback trucks, and the crews that would be assembled with them. So it's a teamed approach, which is kind of the mission ready package type model that EMAC is promoting. EMAC, our partners with NEMA and EMAC have been very encouraged by this and have referenced this. And I think FEMA has moved a little bit on some direction on this, and in fact, some of the draft material they put out a couple of years ago leveraged this document quite heavily, but that process within FEMA, I don't have clarity as to what the outcome of that will be at this point in time.
Thank you. We have a question from Sean Smith who asks, Kevin, does WARN utilize any specific software technologies to facilitate resource sharing, coordinated response efforts, or the exercises that John mentioned?
Well, I'll speak to the WARNs first. So I will say there are differing degrees of software application amongst the WARNs, and some are more centralized than others, and some are a bit more decentralized in the sense that they rely on not a centralized distribution of resource requests. It's really amongst the utilities to make the contacts amongst each other, and that's where the resource typing material comes in play. And in that, several—I don't have a good firm count off the top of my head—have a resource database that they host as part of their website on the members-only side. And so, let's just say that I'm here in the D.C. area, so. So let's say, for instance, Fairfax decides they need some type of resource. They can look and look out and say, oh, okay, the folks down in Newport News have that. I'm going to call John and see if he's able to bring that to me. Whereas other systems are a little bit more automated. I think Texas would be a great example in that they have a very strong capability to have a forward lean where they actually have a system that can call out to utilities and use, I don't know, I can't think of the software off the top of my head, but basically a text, phone, email system to get some information about the operational status of the utility, which was very, very useful during events like Hurricane Ike or Gustav, I can't remember which one hit into that. I think they got a little piece of both of those. And so if they got no response, they knew that there were likely to be communication issues. And so they were able to use that information. They have, I think this is an important point to make, Texas and many other states, the WARN actually has a seat either physically or virtually in the EOC as part of emergency support function number 3, which is kind of where we fall into the national framework. And that has been extremely effective. And in fact, New York State didn't have that status prior to Sandy, and I think based on the knowledge that the New York WARN program was able to share with state emergency management, they've come to the realization that what they really do have need to have a more direct communication link. So I think there's varying degrees, so there's no formal process by which that can occur because that becomes resource intensive from a financial perspective. But that's why the partnership with the emergency management community is really critical.
So it basically varies from place to place.
Yeah.
And perhaps one of the questions that I had that's related to this, these WARNs are basically run at the state level, correct, under the framework. And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, how are they typically organized in terms of, is there a board or something like that that kind of shepherds it along?
Right. So as John noted, there are, and I think I mentioned too, there are a number of I would say associate members that are, in addition to the signatories. So most of the national associations have state level sections or affiliates, so AWWA, Water Environment Federation, and many of those associations provide some of the administrative support, if you will. But there is either some sort of steering committee or board that kind of oversees the agreement and kind of facilitates information exchange during an incident as necessary.
Very good.
So they're kind of autonomous. They really exist. The agreement is only active when there's a need between two entities.
And do these typically have to go through some kind of state legislative approval, or are the existing mutual aid laws in most of the states already available?
In the majority of the states, the laws on mutual aid are permissive for municipality or entities of the municipality to enter into this type of agreement. The only exception there would be in a few states where there were some kind of awkward prohibitions on the inclusion of the quote unquote private sector.
Right.
It's not like we're having Walmart and Home Depot be a signatory. It's a critical lifeline sector that just happens to be privately held. And so really the mechanism by which a community or a utility gets approval is usually through their either their board or their city council giving them the go-ahead to be a signatory to the agreement.
Very good. Let's give John a couple questions here. We have a couple questions about the Water Laboratory Alliance that piqued some interest. Clarence Warren staff just asked, can you please expand on the Water Laboratory Alliance? And then Richard asked, who is responsible for making contact with WLA, Warren, or EOC? John, can you give it a stab?
Yeah, I'm not the expert on our Water Laboratory Alliance program, but basically that program has been set up in response to HSPD 9 to enable the water sector to have the appropriate level of capacity of laboratory resources should there be a large-scale disaster, especially one involving CBRN contaminants, which most folks know have specialized laboratory requirements. And so EPA, working under the umbrella of the Environmental Response Laboratory Network and with partners at CDC and other federal agencies, has been supporting this concept of a more robust and coordinated water laboratory water laboratory program. And there's a lot of information via the web link provided at the end of my presentation to access the WA resources.
Very good. That's enough.
Could you repeat the other question?
The question was who is responsible for getting in touch with the WLA? Is it the Warren group or is it the EOC?
Should a utility require assistance that may be accessed through the WLA, I think there's a variety of mechanisms to access that support. It could be directly from the utility to their state primacy agency to the EPA region, or there could be emergency management agencies that are also linked in and would know how to contact the appropriate contact within the WLA for that. So I think it would vary, and we actually have developed a response plan and do exercises related to that type of activity to make sure everyone knows.
Very good. I see we have a number of questions in the chat, and this is, let's see, Robert Forgione asked, he says, there seem to be numerous resources available through various agencies, AWWA, EPA, FEMA, et cetera. Can you provide a single list of what resources a Warren utility member should have in a file for reference in case of an emergency? And John, I think one of your documents had something like that. Can you address that question, John?
So the question is there a list of all the resources that someone needs to have?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm all right, Robert. I'm going to have to get you to clarify the question. I'm not sure if you're meaning information resources or if you're meaning actual, you know, equipment and things like that. Let's see. He did go on to say, I saw a request for Hurricane Sandy assistance from Water Isaac, but not from VA Warren. From speaking with our local Warren folks, it appears that there is no link from a state's request for help to adjacent state Warrens. What is being done to change this?
I'm not sure specifically what the Water ISAC request may have been about, but Water ISAC, so during I'll just apply the example from Hurricane Sandy and past events. So I host a daily call with the Warrens if it's an event of the scale of like Sandy to have some coordination and situation awareness amongst the Warrens, which then results in a daily situation briefing that we do post to the Warren situation reports page. That does provide that. The Water ISAC is involved with that, and so I suspect that the communication that they may be referencing, and I'd be happy to follow up afterwards, may have reflected on some of the issues that were coming out of that situation briefing, amongst them being principally some of the generator issues, but also fuel supply issues were critical, which wouldn't necessarily be a resource that another the utility would have provided to another, although that did occur. So it may have been also the Water ISAC is connected with shared information with the National Infrastructure Coordination Center, and sometimes they receive specific information requests for information from DHS that then they communicate out. There was one with regard to, chemical supply issues that may emerge. So it could be a variety of things. I assure you, though, that we do speak with each other, and I'm not saying it can't be improved, but, yeah.
Good deal. Okay, we've got a number of questions. I'm going to try to work in as many as I can here. Our time is getting short. Peter Navratil, pardon if I mispronounce your name. He says, I work in a region with a population of 2 million spread around 22 municipalities with a regional district that provides source water to municipalities. I would like to propose a Warren Mutual Aid model. Any suggestions on how to coordinate the mutual aid effort during the event then he goes on to ask, does Warren encourage a unified command model? And perhaps we can just point him to some resources that would address his questions.
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes, but again, this is in that case, that is why it's so critical for the emergency management community to have the water, some representation from the water sector in the EOC to help facilitate that communication. But the Warren doesn't solve all those problems, and because some of these things are cascading upon each other, but having that the seat in the EOC really helps kind of channel that information so that you can get good visibility on that situation. Be happy to follow up more on the particular community that he's mentioning. And
you did mention NIMS in the beginning, right? So
right. Yeah. I mean, you know, so, John, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you covered it. I mean, you know, we definitely utilize the concepts and operate within the constraints of ICS and NIMS, and our documents, guidance documents, sort of show how we do that.
Yeah.
This is an interesting question from Paula Scalingi. And John, if you'll take this one perhaps, because she says, does EPA have an infrastructure interdependencies analysis tool that can be customized for water utilities to use in-house or with local and regional utilities and service providers?
I wouldn't say that there's a specific interdependency tool, but there are a variety of resources that we do maintain on our website that relate to interdependencies and also provide sort of guidance on how to work with critical customers and helping them understand the impacts of a loss of water service. And so, again, I would just direct you to our website to find those pieces of information.
Yeah, I would just add that two examples of that are that we've been involved in is a document on planning for emergency water supply, and then a more detailed one that CDC was part of on a similar thing, but specifically to hospitals and healthcare facilities. That a lot of these systems take the water system for granted. You know, it's very rare that the water system goes out compared to, say, power. Not to knock power, but, you know, when water goes off, people get grumpy very quickly. And so they don't often think about it, that it could actually go away. And so those two documents address those issues amongst the other things that John noted.
Very good. I'm going to try to squeeze just a couple more in. I think this one is a very interesting question from Bob Davison. He says, my local community is served by a central well with 160 housing units. We are categorized as a public water system but have little in the way of resources that we could offer to others in case of an incident. What value can we bring to Warren in our state? And this, I think, is Missouri. Emma Warren? Yeah. Kevin, you want to try that one?
Yeah. So, you know, there's often been a discussion that this is a big system thing versus a small system thing. And I would submit that, you know, just because you don't necessarily have a backhoe or a crew truck or, you know, materials, you certainly have knowledge. And so whether you act as a member of the steering committee to facilitate information exchange or, you know, sometimes the thing that's of greatest need is people. And so, you know, yeah, maybe you've only got a crew of 5 or 10 people, but if they can potentially rotate in to let a guy who's had his house washed away or something to that effect go home and rest, that's just as important as physical equipment.
Absolutely. Marsha Harvey, want to get this in. She says, not a question, just FYI for emergency managers. Northern California has developed a county and local government emergency operations center plan and job aids for water and wastewater that we're willing to share. And she puts up her email address, if you can see it, and you could get in touch with her. And then finally, I'm going to take Ava Jean Moore, my associate, and she says, gentlemen, it is good to see you are stressing the value and mutual benefits of the utilities and local emergency management agency working together. Are you receiving good examples of the reception of the concept, plus how it has enhanced preparedness and response activities? And John, if you'd like to start off on that one, please.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the places that I'm observing this coordination is when we support these tabletop exercises. And sometimes going into the exercise, the utilities and their emergency management agencies aren't as well connected as they'd like to be. And we've actually seen, as a direct result of these tabletop exercises, WARN programs receiving dedicated seats in state emergency operation centers, as well as utilities being acknowledged within their local or county level emergency management agency operation centers. And I just think we're seeing more and more examples of that across the country, and it's very encouraging to see those relationships developing, because that coordination really is essential during an emergency.
So if we have some emergency managers here in our office audience and they haven't heard from their WARN, maybe they should go look for them.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Okay, we have run over on our time. I'm very sorry about that, but lots of good questions and comments, and we do thank everybody. If we could not get to yours today, that contact information will be in the slide deck that will be posted later this afternoon, and so please do feel free to get in touch with our guests. So on behalf of Ava Jean and myself and all our participants today, thank you very much, Kevin and John, for being with us and taking that time, and for all your efforts on this worthwhile initiative in the past and in the future. And we do wish you continued success with it. I think it really makes a big difference.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And folks, before you go, please do take a moment to do the give us some feedback and enter any additional comments you may have. Our next program is scheduled for December 12th, when our topic will be pre-disaster recovery planning, and our guest will be Carolyn Harshman, President of Emergency Planning Consultants, that's located out in San Diego, California. Please make a note on your calendar and plan to join us then. Have a great afternoon, everyone. We are adjourned. Thank you. Bye.